God, Brad. All right, shake it off. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, it is momentous day. A momentous day. Because we are taking the challenge.
You guys
the gauntlet
feeling strong?
Has been thrown down. What?
You feel strong?
I feel very strong.
Living large.
It's a very special episode of Webcomics Weekly where we tackle the topic all cartoonists dread. Brad, what is it?
Where do you get all those wonderful ideas?
No. Oh. And who is brave enough to walk where angels fear to tread?
That would be we.
It is Dave Kellett over at SheldonComics.com.
Heyo, pancakes.
Brad Geiger over at Evil-Comic.com.
Can't say Scott didn't do it.
Chris Straub over at Starslip.com.
Murder.
And
most foul.
Me, your de facto host, Scott Kurtz, over at PvPOnline.com.
Really just the announcer.
De facto?
All right.
Now we're going to get mad about that.
Wow. Is there anything I can say that doesn't upset people?
I was going to say de awesome, not de facto.
Gosh. I love kittens. What are you saying about puppies?
Kurtz, I've always disagreed with your cat-loving ways.
Your anti-puppy rhetoric won't stand, sir. It won't stand.
So
ideas, times, where, who wants to jump in first?
How make go?
Listen, did you not hear what we just did in this intro? That's where ideas come from. You're born with it. And if you're not, we're sorry. Podcast over.
The end. You've been listening to Webcomics.
No. Brad. No.
Oh, sorry. I hear that cue and I just go into overtime.
<At the ready.
laughs> It's all three of us grabbing for Brad. No, Brad. It's a joke. Come on.
Seriously, though, I think this question gets asked the most, and I know that I've seen so many cartoonists roll their eyes at it. And the question that I have, I guess, introspectively, is why do we roll our eyes at it? I think it's a legitimate question. And I think what we don't realize is that as difficult as a question is to answer, when people ask that, it's not necessarily a question. I think it's more of a compliment. I think it's more of them saying, wow, I couldn't do that.
Everybody who asks that question is like, no, it is a question. Answer the question.
Oh.
Yeah, because every time I've ever been on a panel and that question got asked, the person tried to answer it by being as funny as he could. And
right.
By way of doing that, show how funny he is without ever answering the question.
Yeah, right. Has anyone ever answered the question?
It's double insult.
Yeah. Had a response like, "Where do you get your funny ideas?" And someone's like, "Toledo, but a bump."
I have a monkey in an outhouse, and I just give him paper.
Oh man, that was another great idea. Where did you get it? The monkey in the outhouse. No further questions.
Where did you get the monkey in the outhouse idea?
No.
I pay a team of German comedy writers. What? Where did you get the German comedy writers idea? I got it out of a book.
and then he jumps in this hot air balloon and takes off.
I have left the world a better place than when I found it.
I don't know how it works. Goodbye, everybody.
I like how you became mostly stuck there.
I love how you are like, the question is asked, and he hits a button, the special button, and then the skylight busts open, and a hot air balloon comes down for him to escape in.
Farewell.
What is that? Where did that idea come from, Chris?
From the German
comedy
writers.
I shall meet you at Trafalgar Square in 80 days. Goodbye, everyone.
So I really think we should. How are we going to tackle this, guys? Because
this is the big one.
One. Well, look, what did we just do? What that was kind of funny. We just did it. Wasn't it just references? A lot of it.
There was non sequiturs in there. That's always funny.
I really, in tackling this question, there's no one right answer, and I think that's the key. The key is ideas come from any number of places, practices, and habits. But what ends up happening eventually is that you end up conditioning your mind to always look for the joke. You're always – and not to bring up a sad subject, but it is a sad subject kind of lined with some happiness and introspective humor, but – when we were discussing, Brad, I think you were even there, when we were at Baltimore Comic Con this year, and a lot of the Comic Con was dedicated to remembering our friend Michael Ringo, who passed away recently. But so many of us that worked in comics shared with each other the fact that we had concocted these elaborate stories in our head in which Mike is not dead. he's tricking or hiding, or he comes back to life in some way, and we consider it. And we were all discussing how, at the same time, in different places, we all had wives or loved ones coming up and saying, boy, you really are a comic book writer, because look at this, you know. And it's because you really do condition your brain to take any situation that you walk into and convert it into a joke or a story.
Yeah, my brother and I used to do that all the time where we were in a scenario and we would always try and best each other at what is the worst possible thing that you could say at this moment. And we are constantly thinking about what the worst possible thing to say is. Or you're constantly going, you know, it would be fitting if, you know, because of by the rules of drama, if a certain thing happened, you know, if I'd crashed my car today because I made this other joke. Yeah. Well, that's not going to happen, but you can't break free of thinking that how appropriate it would be. Like, what a good twist in the story of my life that would be.
Well, you and I do it all the time. We were driving one day, and we saw a girl in a burqa. Remember that? Was that you?
I don't remember.
And we said, let's pull over and tell her, you don't have to be this way, and rip the burqa off her and take her to, like, some 80s montage where we give her different clothes to try on. And then she leaves, and she's like, thank you. You have taught me to break free of my religious.
I remember
and then we're
that.
Like, we'll see you later. Thanks. And then as soon as we drive off, some guys come out and beat her to death, you know? Or she immediately goes, what have I done? This is not me. I hate this. And then she kills herself. You know,
or you turn the corner and you see a Catholic nun, and then the screen just ends with you and him looking at each other, smiling. Thinking, you know, like, there's our next one.
Yeah, and we clink our MGDs and go
well,
to
that's
work.
That's the sort of maybe I'm seeing a pattern there, because my wife and I always are pitching on jokes and situations without even thinking about it. Like, we'll do this whole thing, and you guys probably play a version of this game too that we call voice planting, where you're out in public and you're watching two people interact.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And you pretend what their conversation is and make it as funny as you possibly can, you know, for what they're dressed like, for what they look like, for what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think a cartoonist's brain, you're right, Scott, it's always on. It's like, it's kind of like, you know how when you, as a kid, you had a day at a park for roller coasters or a day at the beach? And then that night, your dream is actually filled with that sensation of riding roller coasters, or filled with that sensation of, like, waves crashing over you if you were at the beach.
Right.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that feeling where your brain literally couldn't forget the motion of a roller coaster?
Yeah.
Or forget the motion of waves?
I used to get that at a wave park or like a water park. You can't.
Well,
forget
I think
it.
once you start to train your mind to think about the weird and skewed ways that comedy works and look for it in daily life, you actually start to see comedy everywhere. The question is just how do you filter it into the best joke that you want to tell that day?
Well, and I'm so happy you brought up your wife, because I'm married to somebody who is not a writer and who is not a humorist in any way, and you've got to be really careful, because I cannot turn it off. I keep getting told I have no filter, and it just comes spilling out. And it's really, really difficult, because she'll be trying to have this very serious conversation with me, and I'll realize that she keeps setting me up for punchlines, and I can't keep myself from bringing it out, you know. And because there's also that thing in your mind that's always going, I wonder if this would work. I wonder if that would work. If I said this way, with this word, and then you found something that's really close, and you're like, oh man, that's really close. And then you see somebody on the street, and you're like, okay, all this guy's got to do is ask me why I'm wearing the yellow hat, you know, and just walk up to him, and your eyes start going up to the bill of your hat, like, hey, go ahead, ask me. You know,
Brad,
and you're like a dog. Yeah, you know, just throw the stick, and I'll fetch it. It'll be great, you know.
We'll have a good time.
Brad, yeah, I have a funny story to tell you in that vein. I grew a monster zit this week on my chin, and it kind of formed under the skin, and it really kind of scared me and Angie, because we were like, God, this has become, should we see a doctor about this? This is really bad. And she's like, you've got an infection under there. And I was like, what do I do? Do I take antibiotics? Is this that staph thing going around? Am I going to die from a zit? So I came home the other day, and I walk in the house, and my chin was hurting. It was hurting just from existing. Not like if you accidentally forget and touch the chin. So I walked in, and I said to Angie, Angie, I brought you a gift. And she said, what? And I went, my face hurts. And she goes, oh. And I went, no, you don't understand. My face hurts. And she goes, do you want to call the doctor? And I said, Angie, no, I'm giving you this gift. My face hurts. And she goes, what am I supposed to say? And I go, oh, my God. You're supposed to say, it's killing me. And I'm like, my God, I had set you up. I gave you the layup.
I had speaking about zits, I had one that
oh, good.
Finally.
I had one that scared me to death, and it was on a, I can't believe I'm about to do this, rather personal place on my anatomy. And I went into the doctor, and I'm waiting in the doctor's office, and I go to this place where there's like a team of doctors, and you never really know who you're going to get. This woman walks in. And she's gorgeous. She's my doctor. And she said, what seems to be the problem? And I looked at her and I said, I'm having trouble sleeping. Because I realized at that point that I was not, you can't have a beautiful doctor. It's just impossible. And I'm sitting there and I made something up and walked out. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to deal with it, whatever this is, but I'm not going to, this is not going to happen. And I got an entire week's worth of strips out of that situation because I went home laughing at myself because there's just no way you can have a beautiful doctor because you don't every time you go into the doctor, you're showing them disgusting, horrible things about yourself. And I just was not going to do it. And I think the best punchline was that the character realized that he could not fake polio.
Doctor, okay. I got to tell the doctor I got this thing. It's bothering me. Oh, my God, she's beautiful. All right, Mr. Geiger, what's the problem that you're having? I'm having trouble sleeping. Can't sleep at night. Can't sleep. Oh, no. Is there been any changes in your life maybe that are affecting? Are you stressed? No, just trouble sleeping. Just some medicine for sleeping would be helpful. Okay. Well, I can prescribe something for you here. Well, that'd be great. That'd be great. And then I can sleep. She goes, all right, but I'd really like to get to the root of the problem. You know, you should drink a glass of warm milk before you go to bed. And then Brad slips and goes, yeah, it's probably the zit on my dingus.
Well, better yet, that doesn't happen. The female doctor walks out and the nurse says, what was wrong with him? And she says, groin zits.
Yeah.
But you see, I mean, this is also part of it. I think you've got to find somebody that you're comfortable enough that you can have a back and forth. And this thing just grows and grows. And as Scott was setting up that whole thing, my mind was like, okay, where is he going to go with this? Where is he going to go?
Yeah.
And he went a different direction. And I'm like, his direction was great. And then I shared what my direction was. And out of all of that, you get some really good stuff.
And you can work it out. Like, all four of us can work out the best joke.
That actually, Steve, that happens with Erica, and that kind of drives me crazy. We've talked about it, where we'll be having a conversation, and we'll be making jokes, and she'll make a joke. And then I'll, you know, because anytime I've ever gotten together with anybody when we're making jokes up, we are trying to work out the best angle for the bit. We are trying to find the best punchline, and maybe there's good ones along the way, but there's the best one. And then a set of good ones. So I'm pitching other ones, and she's going, "Why are you undoing the last one I did?" I'm like, I'm not undoing it. I'm not trying to win.
What was wrong with my idea?
We're both just working through them.
Dave, you got that great point on this that I love. Or were you just going to naturally bring it up?
No, I don't know what you were going to say. Go ahead and prompt me on it.
From your experience as a – oh, it's not stand-up, the other kind of comedy.
Oh, sketch comedy?
Improv?
From experience in improv, you used to – I remember you telling me once that you have kind of an exercise, and it's called yes and.
Oh, well, yeah, that's an old rule in acting. It's just an acting exercise. But the idea is in comedy is that let's say I walk into a room and we're doing an improv session and there's no props, no costumes, no nothing. And within a line or two, I establish that I'm a cop and that I'm married and that I have an addiction for donuts, right? Well, the problem in that improv session is if someone says, no, you don't have an addiction to donuts, you immediately ruin the energy of the build that Chris was just describing, which is the pitch on the pitch on the pitch. So the whole idea in improv comedy is to is to do a yes and, where you accept whatever reality somebody presents you with, and then you build on it. And that's what I think when funny people get together and they start pitching on idea after idea after idea, they're sort of playing yes and, because Chris is not saying, hey, I'm negating your joke. What I'm doing is I'm taking the energy and the potential that I see from that joke and I'm building on it.
Yeah, and that's it. And the most important part, I think it has a lot of use in a collaborative writing situation, or just something where you're hanging out with somebody trying to get a good humor, and that is that the most important part of yes and is yes. In other words, you're not stymieing that other person by saying no. That's the worst thing you can hear in a creative environment is the word no. You want right. to keep hearing yes, yes, you know, your idea was great, and I'm going to build on it. And then that other person can say yes and. The most important word there is yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely yes. That's true, Brad.
Yes, and you're wrong.
Someone that doesn't understand the concept is, hey, I'm a cop and I'm on my beat, but I gotta get some donuts, so I'm here for some donuts. And then Brad goes, yes, and donuts are very fattening. You shouldn't eat those. I wouldn't if I were you. But yes, you are eating them.
That's that bit from The Office that's so funny, is Michael taking his improv class.
Yeah, and he always has a gun.
And he always breaks it. So the woman is like, all right, you go first. And she's like, does anybody seen my gynecologist? He's a midget. He's an angry midget. And he goes, boom, Michael Schoon, FBI.
Yeah.
He does not care about the setup.
No.
Yeah. As far as those building on jokes, though, is that because my wife and I, we hang around most of our friends are writers. So, and we do this at actually comics conventions. You guys and I do this, is that not only will we be continually pitching on a joke to try to make it better, but there'll be times where I'll get a phone call from one of you later that night or a text message like, hey, just figured out a better build on the joke. And it's like 6 hours later. And I'm like, wow, we are still working on that joke, aren't we? That's awesome.
Yeah, that's because building a joke is a beautiful thing, and once you really become as obsessed about it as you will become if you start doing a daily strip, you're going to really, really see – everybody appreciates a punchline, but people who are really into humor appreciate the setup just as much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, and you're going to soon become the person that your spouse does not want to watch television with.
My God.
Because, oh my God.
Or have a serious conversation.
Listen, I remember when I came back from The Matrix. I was working at KLTY Radio, and I came back from seeing The Matrix. And the next day I was at work, and I was going off. I could not stop talking about The Matrix and how great it was and how revolutionary it was and how it's changed everything. And it just made George Lucas look stupid with that episode one. And my friend Richard pulled me aside and said, you know, that movie was not that good, Scott. The Matrix was not that good. And I'm like, what, are you kidding me? It knocked everything. He goes, look, the reason why you like The Matrix is you're a satirist. And you watch a comedy and you can't enjoy it and laugh at it. You're picking it apart. You're getting disappointed at a joke that you thought was good that you should have written. And you're picking apart all the bad jokes. And you know ahead of time what's going to happen because you've dissected it already. And when a movie comes along, any movie that surprises you, that catches you off guard and knocks you out of that mindset where you don't dissect it, you actually enjoy it like everybody else. And that's all that happened with The Matrix. That movie is derived and it's cliched and it's Campbellian and it's been done a million times before. It just had some neat effects in it. But it knocked you off your satirist's throne. It took you for a loop and came at you sideways, and it caught you right, and you got to enjoy it rather than dissect it. And my wife hates watching television with me because I will figure out the joke or the punchline because I'm looking at it from a writer's perspective, like, how are they going to hit this?
Yeah, I have the same feeling with The Sixth Sense because that one completely – surprised me, and a bunch of people at work, I went in and was talking to them, and they go, oh, couldn't you tell that that was what was going to happen? And it was like, geez, no. You know, and I had that same kind of experience that you're describing.
Yeah, no, you do end up doing it. And like, we were watching The Office, and and the new season started, and I said to Angie, I really am trying to figure out how they're going to write Jim and Pam without doing the typical, well, they're together now, so now we got to give them problems and break it up, but they've still got to keep it fresh so that, you know, the relationship is still fun and fresh, even though there's no more sexual tension. And she looked at me and she's like, can't you just enjoy the show? Can't you just watch it? And I was like, no, I guess I can't anymore.
Well, and it becomes tough because, like I said, you do kind of lose your ability to get into a serious conversation, too, because you're constantly – I guess that's probably what we're advising people is give yourself over to that kind of obsessive, compulsive, looking for the joke.
Temporary insanity.
Yeah, yeah, and you give yourself up to it, you know, because it is going to happen. You know?
Let me ask you guys a question.
Go ahead.
This is something I do all the time. I am terrified when I come up with a joke that it's been done before. And I know that it's really hard to come up with a legitimately original punchline that there isn't some variant of in existence somewhere. But how far do you go from the original conception of a joke by yourself, you know, when you've come up with it and then you go, but that's too easy. Like, that's too simple. I can't just do that joke.
Or I know yeah, exactly. This has to have been done before.
Right.
For me, I just make myself a deal that I'm never going to consciously steal from somebody. And beyond that, you know, I know in my own heart of hearts that I'm being true. And beyond that, I don't give it a whole lot of thought.
Hmm.
Well, the way I handle it is that I just try to read as much as possible. I don't want to name any names, but I've talked to a friend on several occasions who will email both Chris and I upset because another web cartoonist is you know, in his mind, stealing his ideas. And I know for a fact the reason that keeps happening, that their jokes keep lining up so closely, is because the other cartoonist is aware that there's going to be an issue. And has decided the best thing to do is just not read the other strip, because then he can never be accused of stealing it. But what you end up doing there is guaranteeing you are going to steal it, because especially if you start dealing with niche topics, if you look at editorial cartoonists, you see them overlap a lot because there's only so many jokes you can make about the same topic. And the challenge is to do something original, to take it and spin it. And you have to be aware of what's out there. Otherwise, you're destined to copy just by default, don't you guys think?
I think that's really hard because I don't know if you're destined to copy, but there's a danger in – I think there is a benefit to looking at the thing that you could potentially copy and then thereby inform yourself so that you definitely avoid those scenarios and those
jokes. Also it's also keeps you from repeating what's already out there. I mean, look, if there's six jokes today about Halo 3, because that's what's out, and that transcends even gaming strips. I mean, Halo is a strip that jocks at college play, and you want to comment on it. You have to know what's already out there so you don't repeat it, and it challenges you to come up with something that hasn't been done yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and I also think there's a happy medium to be paid attention to there as well.
Did we lose Dave?
No. I've just been listening.
All right, you know this is a podcast, though, right? You're participating.
No, I actually find myself talking too much sometimes, so I try to listen sometimes.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
I appreciate that, Dave.
No, we appreciate it. All right, anyway, go ahead, Brad.
No, I was just going to say, I think there's a happy medium, too. I think when you find yourself experiencing media so much that you don't get a chance to create your own, you know it's time to throttle back a little bit. But I think what you're saying is absolutely on target. Yeah, I think you do have to be aware of what's out there, particularly people that you might even consider your competition.
Yeah.
Well,
and now I think, too, is that another reason why it's important to read other stuff is, in addition to capturing and remembering all the ideas that have been done, is that comedy is, in a way, like music. And there is a rhythm and a flow and a beat to comedy, and it's different. It's different tones. Like, I mean, just in the same way that Crosby, Stills, and Nash is different from Metallica, There's different ways of presenting and different beats for comedy, and you want to swim in that. You want to know what that is and know all the different ways to set up a joke and to present the beats of comedy, because it is like hearing different kinds of music. If you're a musician, you may not end up playing that way, but you want to know what that tool is so that if you ever need to do it or use it, you have that arrow in your quiver, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of beautiful metaphors, Dave.
I know. God, I keep going. You know what? I just think too visually. I'm sorry.
Listen, punchlines are like the letters in the alphabet soup.
And no one wants to be Q, but you know what? Someone's got to spell Quatlu. let me ask you this, guys, because this I get this maybe once every quarter. I don't want to say it happens too often, but it happens just enough where I remember it and it drives me nuts. I understand and appreciate when someone says, "Hey, Dave, that joke you did, not that dissimilar from season, I don't know, 5 of The Simpsons in about 10 minutes in." And I was like, "Oh, dang it. You know what? All right, that is kind of similar to that joke." And sometimes you just have to go, "All right, well, Simpsons has done everything." But I love it when someone says, "Hey, did you live in the Des Moines area in the late 70s when there was a children's show called Mr. Fun Times Happy Good Day? Because you just did a joke that's exactly like one of the episodes." And you're like, "What? What is this reference? Are you accusing me of stealing from an Iowan TV children's show?"
Or it's even better when it's not like, "Hey, did you happen to be in that area in 1964? But like, I know you, Dave. Very deft. Mr. Happy Fun Times, actions, story fun. I'm a fan too."
Yeah, they just assume. It cracks me up. It's like the problem is there is no longer a mass market audience as there once was for you know, like, we're not all tuning into the Cosby Show. But so what happens is now you have this sort of long tail of entertainment where there's 10,000 entertainment sources. No matter what joke you do, there's somebody somewhere that has read something. If you have an audience that's 10,000 or above, there's somebody in that audience that has read something every day that you do that is related to some other piece of entertainment out there. And that, unfortunately, can sometimes stymie you in terms of feeling confident about your joke crafting ability.
Right.
But you just have to admit that there, in some ways, there's nothing new under the sun, you know?
Yeah.
I think you just need to realize that you don't live in a vacuum. There are other people out there trying to make strips and rights and rights out there making scribblings. There are other people out there writing jokes, and that whether it's on a sitcom or in a comedy club or in a cartoon strip, especially if you're trying to in any way be a satirist, you're gonna tackle the same joke from the same angle. So,
well, and there are similar constructs for jokes. I mean, there you can almost break it down: exaggeration and understatement, and misdirection. And stuff like that.
I was thinking about this joke this morning. It was a trailer for B-Movie, that new movie with Jerry Seinfeld, the animated movie.
Yeah.
How many times have you seen this joke? Somebody gets hurt comically, and then immediately they stand up after and they go, "I'm okay."
Yeah.
That is just recycled wholesale. Nobody cares that's been done.
That's vaudevillian, though, almost, you know?
Yeah.
That's like 80 years old or 100 years old. Which doesn't mean it's bad.
But you laugh
but
at it still.
But it is
laugh at it.
Well, yeah, one time when we were doing – this is going to be going into a long talk. Well, okay. I invited a speaker one time to Mattel who had his whole professorial job – I think he was from Yale – was just to write about comedy. And he wrote about the levels of comedy and how, like, you know, you start with the childlike levels and then you get to the more erudite, you know, sort of New Yorker comic – levels of comedy where only 100,000 people in America will get the joke. But he said, you know,
Dave.
Oh no.
Dave.
What?
Dave, we lost what? You for a second.
Say
oh,
what?
Oh no.
Say what he said again.
What did he say?
Oh, it was magic. No. What did you cut out on? Okay. So I was talking
childlike
about
comedy.
Yeah,
they were talking. The guy was basically talking about theories of comedy and how the human brain works. And one of the things that he was saying is that, you know, you have these almost Freudian childlike comedy bits, which involve, you know, pain or seeing someone else slip or fall or seeing someone else eat something sour or that sort of thing. And as you get older and more intellectual, you become more of a New Yorker type comedy thing where only 100,000 people get the joke, but But his idea was that you don't move past the childlike comedy thing, so the B movie joke still works no matter how old you are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're basically building on layers of it, but the jokes that work for you as a kid still on some level work for you, you know?
Was this guy's first name Mel by any chance?
Mel. I don't remember, Brett. It was like 2 or 3 years ago.
There was a guy named Mel, and I don't know his last name. I want to say Heilitzer. He did at Ohio State University, he did a course on writing comedy. The final exam was doing a stand-up at an open mic night. And he wrote a book that I really strongly recommend called Comedy Writing Secrets. And it goes through a number – and I got it – this is not something to aspire for, but something that is maybe a good starting out if you don't think your jokes are hitting the mark. It's a – it goes through a lot of almost formulaic systems of writing a joke, and it's actually a very useful starting out point for comedy writing.
Huh.
That's cool.
No, I just remember the title of the guy's book. The title of the guy's book was Laughter, and I'm trying to find his name on Amazon while we talk. But the basic here it is, Laughter, A Scientific Investigation by Robert R. Provine. It was an interesting book. He talked about the basic I don't want to go into it too much here, but he talked about the reasons why we laugh and how we laugh and what we laugh at. And it's a good read if you guys haven't read it before.
Giggle time, making smile factories with word mouths. The book I read and love.
It was only on in Des Moines in the 70s.
It was.
So here's a question, you guys, brainstorming and to a greater extent, writer's block. How do you deal with it? What do you do?
They're calling it brainstorming.
And it's taking the world.
They're calling it the simple line. I still have that joke in my mind. I don't know why.
Wait, what are we talking about? Brainstorming? Okay.
Brainstorming. All right. Well, so the basic – I'll give you my basic tips that I picked up from a company called IDEO. When you do brainstorming, if you're doing it with multiple people, the first part of the process is quantity. You don't want qualitative ideas. You want quantitative ideas. So the goal is to get 50 or 100 ideas if you're going to be brainstorming with other people. And don't edit, like Brad said. Don't say no. Keep judgment out of the equation when you're first throwing it. Then the second stage of brainstorming is to edit and to go through and pick out what works upon reflection and further inquiry. But if you're doing it by yourself, I have no idea how to structure a brainstorming session with yourself. How do you do that?
I've completely forgotten. I feel completely codependent on you now. It's ridiculous.
Why? On me?
Yes.
But we hardly talk about joke construction.
No, it's not necessarily the case, dude. I say to you all the time, I need a joke. The last three strips I've written, I've bounced off you.
Yeah, but you bounced them off me. I think I'm like, that's good. Or I don't know about that part. but I don't go, no, what it needs to be is X, Y, Z.
Well, I told you that joke about Brent and Jay at the party and how I wanted Jay to say something real nerdcore, and the Raggedy Andy guy breaks up with his girlfriend, and I'm like, I need something about Mr. Miracle and boom tubes, and you went, I'm going to stick my boom tube in your mother box. And I went, oh, my God. I would not have come to that. I would not have. And it was this extra flair that I got to put in the joke because of you.
Yeah. So I'm awesome.
You're right. I know.
First Rob.
So I've become codependent on the banter. Remember when we went to McDonald's and there was a guy standing outside of the drive-through line taking orders from cars? And I was like, what is that guy doing? And you went, McDonald's cops. And then we did a whole routine. I would not have done that if I had seen him on my own.
Well, look, it's helpful to have
Yeah.
So, Scott, are you saying then that if someone needs to get an idea, they need to get a Chris Stroud, is what you're saying?
Well, what I'm saying is that...
He's good for what ails.
What I'm saying is that I have spent so much time... I mean, so much of the last year and a half has been on the phone with either you guys or Chris or iChat, is I think I've become codependent on being able to bounce ideas off of other people. And I don't know what – I don't remember what I did when it was just me.
I don't think you're being codependent, and I'll tell you why. I think what you're doing is you realize you're doing it with us a whole lot more because we kind of speak the same language. But I think you always – or if you're like me, perhaps you've always done it with just the people in your everyday life, but you did it in a more introverted, hidden way – and you might not have even been aware that you were doing it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, you like I said before with the yellow hat, I would constantly be sneaking in little punchlines that I was planning on doing in the comic strip as I would talk to people in my daily life. You know, and it, and believe me, I mean, you guys have heard me talk. You know, I will go 15 minutes extra just to go all the way around and lead up to a punchline that I'm working out.
I can attest to that 15 minutes.
I don't have to have a reason. You know, I will find a way to bring up the yellow hat because it's just that important to me.
And Brad, you know what's funny is that I have known you long enough and been with you at enough cons where I'll see it in your eyes as it's coming. You know, you'll just kind of do the lean over.
That's
and
funny.
Like,
I was
Dave, let me,
I was about
let me
to say the same
someone.
Thing. It's that kind of mouth open, like, ha, ha, I'm going to say it, ha, here it comes.
Yeah, Brad's like Homer Simpson in that episode where they're trying to write a breakup letter for the fake guy dating Krabappel, and Homer keeps trying to say, just say you're gay. And he keeps inserting it, and they come up with this great breakup letter about how he can't, the love hates, hurts, and they're like, okay, that's it, perfect. And Homer goes, P.S., I'm gay.
Yeah.
That's like Brad. He's got to fit in the yellow
hat. I got to fit it in.
No matter
what. I got to get it in there somewhere.
Yeah, but how painful.
Why hurt to do it?
How painful is it when the opportunity passes? And
oh,
it's like,
and
oh, I've got a good one. And there's
bring it back around, you know, and then you've got to say, oh, remember 15 minutes ago when you said
right.
a time to eat waffles?
I don't remember.
Well,
that.
There's no bad time to eat waffles because waffles are every time food. You know, and then you do anything to bring it back. Even if you don't have a joke in mind like the waffle thing.
Well, you know what? Maybe cartooning is our response to that. Maybe cartooning is the capturing of that idea or that, you know, all the ideas that you either were like, ah, oh, that's solid gold, or, oh, man, I wish I could have that one. That would have been a zinger, you know?
I wish I could have that one back, yeah.
Well, it's I do that to Chris all the time. Chris has gotten better about it, but Chris is very bad about saying really awesome jokes privately to me, like as an aside. And then I'm like, oh, nobody got to hear that. And then I'll repeat it. And then, you know, Chris and I have discussed how it feels like I'm stealing his jokes. But I remember when we first walked into the Apple store and they had those giant iPhones on display that were really like 30-inch cinema displays to look like iPhones. We walk in and Chris turns to me and very subtly says, that's the iPhone? Well, that's not very convenient to carry around at all. Those are actually quite large. Who's going to want that in their pocket? And I was like, what? You should have saved that for when you walked in.
But, like, the reason why I don't say it out loud is because I'm like, I don't care. Like, I've got another 20 of those. That doesn't matter.
But then I walk in, and the guy that at the Apple store knows me goes, hey, what's going on? So you're back again. I'm like, yeah, hey, those iPods are not very – your iPhones are not very convenient. Who's going to want to carry that around?
And then everybody goes, ah, that's the funniest guy.
And I turn to Chris, and I go, huh? See? It was a good joke.
And then that's when I'm like, oh, awesome. How about you shut your mouth next time?
And then
how about you just close your mouth?
And then cut.
Shut up.
Then cut to the two hours. Apple guys after you guys walk out going, man, another damn small iPod.
<That guy.
laughs> Oh, you.
Oh, you.
You guys think you're being all clever.
But like, I had a friend in college who used to do that, and he would accuse me of leading conversations to make jokes.
Oh, really?
And he would be like, you did not just come up with that. You engineered this whole talk so that we would get to that joke and you would say the joke. I'm like, no. And he used to write down everything that we would say. And I would
of
be
course.
Like, look, it doesn't matter. The reason why a lot of these jokes are funny, and maybe that's a good jumping off point for another conversation, is how inside a joke is, how inside jokes are funnier to fewer people.
Yeah.
But, like, these jokes were, like, a very specific moment, and he'd write it down. And, yeah, it was funny to the people who were
there.
But
he was trying to reverse engineer how you knew that you would get to that.
Yeah, and it's like, I just did it.
But, Chris, you tell jokes that are like that. Like, when we were watching, stuck in that hotel watching Shrek 2, and I turned to you and I said, you know, all joking aside, this story, this movie actually has, like, a nice message to it. And without missing a beat, you went, well, Scott, we're not just watching this because it's on. Your parents are here. Guys, come on out.
But like that, I think the big secret of that is just to open your mouth before you know all of what you're gonna say. Like I kind of knew that was where I was going. And
you need a certain amount of fearlessness and a certain amount of I don't care if I make a jerk out of myself. If it falls flat, it falls flat. Like Chris says, you got another 25 where that one came.
Right.
Well, my wife and I have this theory, not theory, but this idea that we use. We're called the internal joke editor. And sometimes people have their, like, you've all met that tight wad, like, say, an accountant, who their internal joke editor is turned on to, like, high control. Like, they're only going to throw out their best A material, and that's it. You'll never hear it. But even that best A material that they throw out, it's so manipulated and thought through before they say it that it's even not funny then, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
But you've got to have, in some ways, you've got to have that trust in yourself and in the people around you that your joke editor is turned down so low that you're willing to be, like Brad said, made a fool of, or at least not look as funny as you hope, because you're at least trying stuff out. You're experimenting, you know?
I think your editor's higher than mine.
Mine
I'm
is.
Like Michael Scott. I'm like Flan, Custard. And then I'll be up there. Got it. Nailed the joke. No, I didn't nail the joke. I shotgunned 85 of those jokes where you sit and wait and then nail it.
Well, yeah.
And it makes you seem even funnier.
Because there are always more, you know?
But yeah. here is my attitude. I want to point this out. Krista's attitude is the attitude to take if you're listening to this podcast. There's always more. You know, don't be scared of it. Go ahead, Dave. I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No. I was just agreeing with you. You're right. There's always more. There's always another joke to be had.
That's kind of hard to realize. And I guess the four of us and probably most other web cartoonists have done it long enough to where they're comfortable with the idea that there's going to be more later. I used to think, God, maybe I could be a cartoonist for a living and I could come up with jokes every day, because I used to only do it 3 days a week. But I worried, well, what happens if you just sit there and you've got nothing? Well, you get to a point where you've exercised the muscles enough, you're comfortable enough that I'm going to be able to pull it out, you know? Even if it's right. Thursday night at 11:50, I will be able to find something.
Now, I actually had a reader at one point at a con, this was like 2 or 3 years ago, say, aren't you afraid of running out of ideas? And maybe at one point, really early on, I was. But I've actually gotten to the point where I'm sort of excited to see what future me will come up with. Does that sound lame?
No,
not at all.
I think it's like that.
Because I read a quote from Charles Schulz one time where he said, like, he had been doing this, you know, the Lucy pulls the football away joke for 20, 30 years. And then this was like a year or two before his death, and he said, I came up with one, and I thought to myself, why in the past 30 years have I never thought of that joke before, but today I thought of it? You know, same joke construction, same setup, same essentially same punchline creation, but he came up with a totally different – and so like I'm sort of excited to see what future me can come up with.
Well, because you're constantly being – you're constantly letting yourself be open to new input. And so all that input goes into your brain and gets referenced out into these weird non sequiturs, and that's where the new ideas come from. And that goes right back, you know, that's why he hadn't thought of that football joke, because there's something that went into his brain that made it possible. And that's where it kind of comes back to Scott's thing about making yourself available to different types of input, because all that stuff is going to go in and get used somehow.
Yeah.
That's why never as a writer, you're never wasting time. If you're reading a book or watching a TV show or walking through the park, you're always – stuff is always going in there, even when you don't think it is.
Brad, I'll take that point a step further, is that if you're stuck on ideas and if you're finding that you have writer's block, one of the reasons why everybody always suggests changing your physical location and going somewhere else or watching people or going to a coffee shop is because maybe that one-tenth of a millionth percentile of new data that your brain soaks up by going to a new place actually triggers the joke, or lets your brain work on something else in a way that your joke centers can relax and actually stop being so having your internal self-editor turned on so high, you know?
Yeah.
I've been working on a theory, and I don't know if – I've been telling myself this, and I don't know if I completely believe it yet. But so I may be lying to myself. But
I'm a handsome man.
I stopped lying about that a lot around about the time I had to fake polio at the doctor's office. I cried that. Jeez. See, there you go. Even Babe Ruth has a swing and a miss.
See, folks, there's no need to keep your internal joke editor turned on high.
I gotta start my mantra now that I got 25 more. what was I talking about before I so horribly crashed? I've been telling myself this, and that is that there's no such thing as writer's block. There's just an inability to center on an idea. And that goes even further. There's no such thing as a bad idea. You know, when you're in art school, they tell you there's no such thing as a bad color, just bad combinations of colors. And that's very true of ideas. There's no such thing as a bad idea. There's just a bad execution of an idea. There's just an idea that hasn't been thought all the way through. And I think writer's block is when you actually have five ideas on the table and you don't have the confidence to go after one of them. And I'm telling you, when you next time you have a writer's block, be honest with yourself and just take one idea and concentrate on it and work it out. I really do think that writer's block more comes from having too much than from having too little.
Hey, I want to talk about a great motivator for writing humor and a great brainstorming tool, and that is the pressure of a deadline looming over you.
Oh, yeah.
What is it about knowing that you are at the 11th hour of a strip that allows you to come up with the perfect joke where you couldn't come up with it when you have 2 days' worth of time ahead of you?
You know why? I'll tell you why. Because what's that line, great is the enemy of good or perfect is the enemy of good, or what's that line?
I don't know.
I don't know, but apparently it's true.
No, okay, well, the basic idea behind – it's an old
memory is the enemy of forgetting.
Hold on. No, okay, this guy, I hate you. All right, great is the enemy of good.
Where did I get that idea? Who knows? I don't.
From the German writers.
Monkeys in toilets with Germans.
No,
German
so the,
monkey toilet.
The phrase that's good funny. Is I like the enemy – good is the enemy of great, and so here's the idea, is that if you're given 2 days to work on an idea, there's a part of us, even though we're joke writers, that we want to be really good joke writers because we just have enough insecurity and enough artist in us that we want it to be the best one. So, of course, if you're given 2 days, you're going to take those 2 days and think to yourself, oh, man, I know I got a better one inside me. I know I got if I only have two or three times a week where I get to throw one out there, I got to make it good. But if you've got one every day that you've got to throw out, then good enough becomes good enough. And with time and with practice, that good enough becomes great. But when you're always striving for great, then the problem is you don't have enough practice and you're not actually getting it out there into the world and you're not seeing the results of it. And I'm not quite sure if I'm making sense with that. I think in my mind I am. Did that make sense to you
guys?
No,
I get that.
No, I think you are.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what. Like, I recently started posting strips on time. Every day at midnight, the strip is up, the new strip for the day. And the reason why is because I somehow was able to shift my brain to where the deadline, the absolute deadline, for me is midnight the day that it's due. It's not I'll do it sometime the day that it's due. It's due before the day that it's supposed to go up starts. Mm-hmm. And I set that as my deadline. Now, if that works, there's got to be a way to set it up where 2 days prior is my absolute deadline.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny how for everybody, I think that's a different way. For me, it's a week ahead. I'm at a week ahead buffer, and I have been for about 6 years. And I can get 3 weeks ahead, and I know that by the end of the month, it's going to nibble down to a week. But I really have never gotten less than a week ahead. Other than a couple of odd circumstances, but I, no matter what, I can get a 4 week buffer, but I know that it's always going to nibble down to a week buffer. And I think what you're saying is right, Scott. I think part of that is a natural thing, and anything that's natural can be altered.
Yeah. Well, I think what I've been doing right now is I've got to get a strip up because it's late and it's due to it should be up already and I've got to get it up, and then I get it up and then I'm done and then I can worry about it again tomorrow. But that took so much out of me. I'm not going to work ahead, so I don't have to worry about this same problem tomorrow. So you had to get over that hump. And now I think what I need to do is I don't just write one strip. If it's time to write, I have to write a week.
Yeah,
that's you know? What I do.
That's and then I'm not done until I get that whole week done.
I think that's harder to do because I used to feel the same way about it, it's got to be the night before, and then the idea was the freshest it could be. But I think if you're going to have time for everything else that you need to do, you just have to enforce a deadline.
I think we're kidding ourselves. I think that's bunk because I just think a week is close enough.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it stinks that the leopard, like I needed to do a joke about Brent getting leopard and it hit in the middle of a storyline. So I had to wait, and that was bad, but that was just poor planning on my part. Hey, oh, one more thing. Oh, unless you guys have more to talk about the deadline.
I actually do have a bit more.
Okay, go.
Oh, I was going to say, my pro tip for the week in terms of generating ideas is that, and I'm serious about this, the trick in life is not so much coming up with ideas, but remembering ideas.
Mm-hmm.
For that, I would recommend a couple of things. If you have any sort of small texting or phone device, take down little notes in your phone as you're going around or going through life. Because sometimes the joke is so critical or so key and hangs on one word, and my God, you will hate yourself if you get home and you forget that word. And mm-hmm. then you're sitting at your drawing desk for a half an hour with your head in your hands trying to remember what that one word was. Mm-hmm. So write down that one word. Put it on a scrap of paper. Put it on your Sidekick. Put it in your little Picasso notebook. What are those little things called? Those little leather-bound things that you use?
Moleskins, yeah.
Moleskin. Put it in your Moleskin. Write it down. Make it a habit of just tracking little ideas, because even if it's a half-formed idea, like Brad said, 6 months from now, that half-formed idea might prove to be the best storyline you ever come up with. But, you know, you had to have captured it when it was half-formed. So write it down, because no brain is strong enough to remember the perfect construction of every joke that you made throughout the day. So when you do it, jot it down. So that's my pro tip for the week.
I would like to add to that pro tip. Chris carries around one of those small Moleskin books. He always has it in his back pocket and a pen, and I think he's benefited from it a lot. But if you don't want to buy one of those, there's a guy named Merlin Mann who's a productivity expert, and he came up with something called the Hipster PDA, where you buy a stack of index cards and a clip, and you essentially have maybe 10, 20 index cards with a clip on it. You keep that in your pocket, and you have a little space pen or something to write on it. And that is a very inexpensive way to always have note cards, a little something to jot down on in your pocket. But here's my other tip. Be thorough when you write down your ideas, because I started doing this for a while, and I go back at the end of the day, and I'm like, all right, let's look at these ideas that I had earlier in the day. Boombox, yes. What was that? What was boombox? What the hell is boombox? What do I do with this? What was the joke? Oh, God, how did I get the boombox?
And that's worse because then you're like, that was funny, too. I remember it. I remember laughing.
Yeah, you remember just enough of the mood. And that's why I'm saying there's nothing more infuriating than not capturing the idea, because you will hate yourself if, like, you get home and you're like, well, I know it involved Cheese Whiz and something to do with a hedgehog. Oh, God, what was the construction of it? Oh, and you'll hate yourself. So write it down. Capture that idea. And then my other idea, pro tip for the week is, already talked about hang out with funny people, because honest to God, nothing makes you want to write more comedy than hanging out with funny people in your life, or at the very least people that bring you joy. I mean, my wife and I both realized that at one point when both of our art had gone kind of stagnant, that we were kind of hanging out with boring couples and the dinner party.
Is that when I stopped getting invited over to dinner?
Brad, that's exactly when you stopped getting invited to dinner. Yes. Surround yourself with people and things and comedy that brings you joy. And I swear to God, your own art will be better for it. And then the third and final pro tip that I have for the week. One was jotting down ideas. One was hanging out with funny people. And then the third one is, read constantly. And I don't know why this is separate from watching entertainment, but for me at least, reading somehow triggers my brain in ways that watching passive TV or movie entertainment doesn't do. So for those of you that are having maybe writer's block for a long period of time, try a new form of entertainment like reading.
Struggle that pro tip to the ground.
I know that ended on a bad note, but you know what I mean.
I've got a pro tip to throw in, and please, you guys stop me if I for some reason I think I've said this on this podcast before. We were all together and I think in Seattle, and I threw this out, and I remember you guys looked at me weird, but honest to God, if you know you're going to wake up and write the next morning before you go to bed, chant in your mind that you're going to write tomorrow and it's going to be funny. Or, you know, I am going to script Evil Incorporated. I am going to script Evil Incorporated. And keep saying that mentally to yourself over and over and over until you fall asleep. I swear by this. The next morning, it's not like I wake up and I've got, you know, six jokes in my head just ready to be written out. But I find that my writing process, things just happen to flow. Connections get made a lot more easily. I really do believe in using your subconscious, but you've got to prime it the night before and let that subconscious mind work on it throughout the night. And then when you wake up the next morning, you're ready to write. I think you're really ready to write.
Huh.
Wow. I never thought about that.
I threw that out in Seattle. We were all together at Emerald City. And I remember the audience just kind of gave me crickets. You know, they just kind of looked at me like, okay, now what is he going to do?
I'm pretty sure we were all drunk at the time.
Why did he say that? Why is he looking at us?
This really works for me because I work on a storyline basis like I know you do, Scott and Chris. Not so much Dave. I don't see you following a whole lot of storylines except for special instances.
Hi, but, sideways jab.
No, I'm just saying. hey.
I'm kidding.
But I this really works well for something when you're writing in a chain. Where it like for one joke has to lead to the next, has to lead to the next, and you're telling a story that way. This really works for me.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. The problem, Brad, that I would have though is that when I've tried it, I fall asleep saying you will script Evil Inc. tomorrow. You will script Evil Inc. tomorrow, and then I come up way short on like ideas for Sheldon the next day, and it's really.
But I really wish you would. I wish you would write down the Evil Inc. ideas you have.
Email them to you.
Yeah, just you know, you've got my email address. Just send them to me. I'm always looking for something. And my the only bad thing about that is that I would do that week and my readers would all say, oh my God, it's like you've instantly improved overnight.
Was that?
Sorry.
Oh.
Well, that's an interesting technique, Brad. That I never would have thought to use on my own. Thanks for that.
Think positively.
Positive thoughts. Power of positive thinking.
And laugh every day.
It worked for me. It'll work for you.
So that's where that comes from.
Well, listen, do we want to talk about anything else?
Oh my God.
I mean, we could fill a whole other podcast, I think, with more talk about this.
And maybe we should at some point, but what's our time right now?
We're at 56 minutes.
Oh, that's good enough.
I think that, yeah, I'm literally...
Listen, here's some topics we'll save for next time. Avoiding the crutches that you use when you do get stuck.
Oh, yeah.
Running gags.
Yeah.
Running gags and how to make them work.
They'll
and stay
you.
Fresh. There's a million more things we can talk about. So
I'm actually going to be interested to read the next week's letters and see if it was helpful to anybody or if they go, God, you guys dodged every single one. All you did was make jokes the whole time. Every time I wanted you to answer, you just, I don't know. I think it was useful. And I think there's a reason why nobody talks about it. It's because it's hard.
It is difficult.
It's very hard to quantify.
Quantify, yeah.
But we tried. We met the challenge, at least. We weren't afraid.
I like some of these other guys.
And that's our podcast, Brad.
Okay, I missed my cue. This has been the weekly...
Now we don't need to cover the running gag. That's an example.
Exactly.
And the callback. This has been the Webcomics Weekly podcast with your friends Dave Kellett at SheldonComics.com, Christopher Straub at Starslip.com, Chris.
Positive thoughts, Brad. Positive.
Come on, Brad. Answer to yourself. Answer to yourself.
Scott Kurtz at PVPOnline.com and me. I'm Brad Geiger at Evil-Comic.com.
Gosh. Yikes.
You need to incorporate it
awesome.
Into your mantra.
I feel good. I feel good that we're back.
That's right. I've got to do that the night before we record this to say I will not make a doofus of myself.
I will get through the outro.
I would love it. Though, Brad, your mantra the night before is I will not mess up the weekly web. I will not mess up.
And as a result, I don't get any sleep.
Right? You're up all night. I will not mess with it.
And then, you know, right before the show, he's like, Webcomics Weekly, Webcomics Weekly, Webcomics Weekly Podcast, Webcomics Weekly Podcast. How hard is that? All right. It's time for the weekly webcomcast.
The pellet with the poison.
Web powder with the pestles and the flagon with the dragon.
Flagon with the dragon.
Flagon with the dragon has brewed this true.
Punchy. Oh, bloopers.
All right.
Where's Dick Clark?
We'll see you guys next week. See you later.
See you later.